Greetings. I'm Pastor Joel of Heart City Church, and welcome to Happy and Whole in Him. A few years back, my wife and I were at a church planners training conference down in Florida, and they were brutally honest about all the difficulties in church planning. They talked about how we'd be stretched, how the enemy would attack us, how we'd have to sacrifice. And that was made palpable when our key speaker, Paul Hahn, arrived quite distressed. He had just flown in from seeing a pastor who had just planted a California church, a young guy with a wife and kids. This pastor was now on his deathbed. A man who had been sitting in the same training we were was now dying. The next couple days, we prayed for him much. We waited on the updates, but he passed away. A sobering note to end the conference on as we headed out on the same path he had taken. We had worship every day at that conference, and a song I learned there from Porter's Gate has remained stuck in my head. Your labor is not in vain, though the ground underneath you is cursed and stained. Your planting and reaping are never the same. Your labor is not in vain. It's one of those songs where you don't sing to God, but God sings to you with your voice. And the chorus goes, "For I am with you, I am with you, I am with you, I am with you. For I have called you by name. Your labor is not in vain." That song is based on 1 Corinthians 15:58, where Paul writes, "Therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain." Now that verse begins with the word therefore, and when we hear the word, that word, we ought to ask what therefore is therefore. The reason the Christian's labors are not in vain is because of the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. This is what Paul's whole chapter is about. And Paul adds that if the resurrection isn't true, Christians should be pitied more than anyone. I mean, think about it. We'd be going through all these religious motions our whole life for nothing. If there's no resurrection, we should just eat and drink, live it up, because tomorrow we die. Nothing matters. But because Christ was raised from the dead, it changes everything. Now, I know we live in a culture where many think religion is all about your personal preference. Whatever works for you. I mean, whatever's helpful for you, whatever's true for you. Do you know the majority of people today say truth is always relative to the individual in their situation? My friend, this way of living does not work. I mean, think about it when you leave in your car. You don't want some folks thinking red means go to them and green means stop. You don't want your boss suddenly believing hours or minutes and then paying you how he feels at the end of the week. No, there is absolute truth. There is objective truth that impacts all of us, like it or not. So the question comes down to whether or not Jesus was raised from the dead. Is that true? And Paul spends 50-some verses at the end of this letter, and he begins with empirical truth, which means truth can be proven. He looks at eyewitness testimony. There was a whole lot of folks, over 500, that had seen the risen Christ. And when Paul wrote this, you could go talk to them. Paul moves on to irrefutable logic in verses 12 to 34, which obviously I can't cover in this devotional. So I encourage you to look into it yourself, this chapter, buy a study guide, or sit down with a friend and look into it. Because if Jesus was raised from the dead, it changes everything. This would mean if you're, for the Christian, in this life we aren't putting our trust in a dead guy like Muhammad or Buddha, but the first and only man who broke the world death rate statistic, conquering that enemy who was previously undefeated, death, and guaranteeing believers that their lives and labors have meaning in him. Now Paul will admit, yes, it is mystery, but don't let that make you doubt. As Eugene Peterson put it well, listen to this, mystery is not the absence of meaning, but the presence of far more meaning than we can comprehend. Yes, the mystery of that last day, when the trumpet sounds and the bodies of everyone everywhere from every time will be raised from the dead, some to eternal glory in heaven, others to eternal shame in the second death. Eternal glory for the Christian means God is going to rewind the tape of all our failures and mistakes and play them back to far greater joy and beauty than all the sadness and misery of this life. A close with missiologist Leslie Newbegin, who once said, when he was asked, "Are you an optimist or a pessimist in this day about God's mission to the world?" And Leslie responded, "I'm neither an optimist nor a pessimist. Jesus Christ is risen from the dead." I think part of his point is how we feel about our experience right now is not ultimate. King Jesus has won and now reigns over all things. That means the Christian's labors are the only ones that matter eternally, so we can trust our resurrected Lord and press on in our race. My friend, remember who you are and who you belong to.